Today is the appearance day of Vrakeshwar Pandit. Who doesn't know who Vrakeshwar Pandit is? One, two, three. Vrakeshwar Pandit is described... Vrakeshwar Pandit, the reason I mentioned Vrakeshwar Pandit right away is because for a small thing I can just set up this sound thing, and I recommend any devotee who has any sort of inspiration to speak about Krishna to the world, you should have your own YouTube channel, your own podcast, because even if five people listen to it who don't know about Krishna or who want to know about Krishna, that's a great service to them. So I say this because I always feel embarrassed, putting this microphone on and like, who am I to record this, record myself, and then put my own, talks or videos on YouTube. Who am I to do that? And in one way, who am I? How arrogant, because God only knows how fallen I am. At the same time, there's thousands and millions of souls who are innocent and who are willing and ready to hear about Krishna, even from neophytes like me. So why not make that available to them? So Vrakeshwar Pandit, we need all the blessings that we can get, right? So Vrakeshwar Pandit, I'll just do this real quick. Vrakeshwar Pandit is described in the Chaitanya literatures as an eternal associate of Lord Chaitanya. Some say he was Tungavidya, the Manjaris, who assist the gopis, who give pleasure to Krishna. And he appeared in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes and was very close to Lord Chaitanya, we hear. And he was known as the great dancer who danced at one point for how many hours?
72
hours, non-stop. Non-stop dancing. While Lord Chaitanya was singing also in this kirtan. And at one point Lord Chaitanya told him, if I was a bird and I only had one wing, you would be my second wing, and in this way I could fly. So with Vrakeshwar Pandit's blessings, we can speak a little about sex desire in Krishna consciousness. Sex desire in Krishna consciousness, a topic that, doesn't affect anybody, of course. So sex desire in Krishna consciousness. I'll be the first one to admit, I have issues with sex desire. I struggle with sex desire for sure. No question about it. And therefore, I look for stuff that can help me deal with this. And one source is online. And so I was looking online for resources for devotees of Krishna about the topic of sex desire, how to deal with sex desire. And while there's literally thousands and thousands of videos and workshops by Christian leaders, Christian pastors across the world about this particular topic, about how Christians can deal with the issue of sex desire, there's only like two or three videos on the entire internet that are Krishna conscious or Vaishnav based, And one of them is Urmila, Mother Urmila, from America, a female leader in ISKCON, quite famous world traveler. She made a video called Dealing with Sex Desire in Krishna Consciousness, and that video has 78,000 views. And so I watched it, and plagiarized or took a lot of the stuff which I'm going to present here. And while I was looking at this video, I thought, okay, this is great. It presents the whole theology of sex desire and what we are in the big picture of God, and how does this, what is this lust, and then how does it relate to love and all that. And then she gave a very practical, Formula's watching. She, very theoretical, okay, what to do? Like, what are we to do as practicing bhakti yogis? But one thing, if I may humbly say, she didn't talk about is what I'd like to focus on towards the end of this lecture, is the ground level reality of our lives. There's, theory here, and then there's practical stuff here. To give you an example before going into the details, there's this famous prayer by Yamunacharya that Prabhupada quotes in one of the purports of the Gita, where Yamunacharya, this great saintly king from South India from centuries ago, praise Yadavini Mama Cheta Krishna Padara Vinde Navanavarasi Damatu Rantumasi Tadavati Bhatanari Sangames Marimane Bhavati Mukavyakara Shushti Nishtimanam Cha. I learned this verse when I was an enthusiastic monk, you know, like, yeah, I'll be celibate my whole life. And so this verse is written by a king who has many wives, you know, and he says, ever since I have been attracted by chanting God's and Krishna's names and serving Krishna, I've been experiencing an ever new transcendental bliss, a pleasure so high that now when I think of sex life, I spit at the thought. So, you know, with all due respect to Yamuna Acharya, that's not really me. Like, and I don't think that's you either, or most of us. Like, right? 25, 26 years of chanting Hare Krishna, it's not that when I think of sex life, I spit at the thought. Unfortunately, and I wish that was the truth. So that's what I'd like to get at. You know, there's theoretical and then there's practical in 2020 or 2019 in the world today. And I think we can come out of this with a sort of a refresher course, a little refresher of what is God's position, who are we ontologically, like a review, which is always nice. And also with practical tips on what's the ideal course that we should take and what happens when we have difficulties on this path. So let's talk a little bit about what our scriptures say, the theological picture that our Gaudiya Vaishnav theology gives on this topic. Well, first of all, we all experience sex desire in this world. And so by philosophical definition, if there is a God and if God is the source of everything, then there must be sex desire in the spiritual world. There must be sex desire with God. The Bhagavatam says, Janmatya Yasyataha, God is that from whom everything emanates. So it's impossible, just philosophically, that something from the emanation contains a characteristic that doesn't exist in the source. Follow. So if down here in this material world there is such a thing as sex desire, then philosophically it makes sense that the source, which we accept as God or Krishna, has sex desire. And that sex desire is described as, what is it called? The original rasa, the original mellow, the adi rasa. Yes, the adi, original rasa. Bhaktisiddhanta calls it also the Shringara rasa. The original sex desire that who has? Krishna has. That Krishna has, that God has. He has this desire to enjoy. Now, let's, from the very beginning, make sure we're not confusing selfish, materialistic, harmful, self-centered, lust or sex desire to the adiras, which is defined as completely spotless and pure and pristine. Because again, if God exists, he must be pure. So how can his quote-unquote sex desire be impure, right? But it's there, the adi rasa. And there's a very interesting verse that we can go to develop this point a little bit. And that is a verse from the Brahma Samhita, where Krishna and Radha, or Krishna's expansion, is described. And both as having this adi rasa imbued in him or in them. This verse goes, Ananda chinmaya rasa pratibhavita vista virya eva nijarupa taya kala bigo loka eva nivasatya kilatma bhuto govindam anipurusham tamaham pajami. So listen to this, please. I worship Govinda, right? The primeval Lord, residing in his own realm, in Goloka, we call heaven or the spiritual world Goloka. And there is Radha, the embodiment of the ecstatic potency. So God has many potencies, we believe, has many shaktis. And one of them is his Ladini Shakti, or his pleasure potency, which is embodied in the person of the divine, the goddess par excellence, Radharani, right? And not just Radharani, but then she's there with her expansions of herself, the Manjaris, or the Sakis, as they're called, who are expansions of Radha, and who also are permeated, as the verse says, permeated and vitalized by Krishna's ever-blissful spiritual rasa. So this point of Adi Rasa. God enjoys, he's the enjoyer, he's the supreme enjoyer. And how does God enjoy? He enjoys with his own expansions, who are simultaneously one with and different from him. Right? When we read the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, Krishna is just enjoying, whether it's with his girlfriends, or whether it's with the cowherd boys, or whether it's with Yashoda and Nanda, or whatever the situation is, Krishna is always described as just enjoying. So, by definition, we worship a God who's like the supreme partier, you know, but, you know, who loves to enjoy, yeah. I mean, we use the word to party in this, you know, perverted sense down here, but in the original pure sense, God also enjoys. And as we said, he enjoys with his own pleasure potency. So that's God. What about us? Where do we stand? Where do we fit into this picture? Just as God likes to enjoy we who are his parts and parcels, right? Krishna says in the Gita, Mamaivamchu, Jiva Loke, Jiva Bhuta Sanatana, we are Krishna or God's fragmental, eternal parts. So as God's fragmental parts, we are Anandamaya Vyasat. What does Anandamaya Vyasat mean? Anandamaya Vyasat. We are always ontologically built in looking for happiness, looking for pleasure, pleasure-seeking beings. That's who we are. We're built like that. Because we, you know, we are just like Radha and the Manjari, the Gopi, and the Nani. These are all expansions from Krishna's pleasure potency, and we're tiny little jivas. You are a jiva, I am a jiva, you are a jiva, a jiva, a jiva soul, a jivatma, tiny, small, little, individual soul. And fundamentally, our texts say, we are pleasure-seeking. We want pleasure. But how does a pure soul get pleasure? How does a pure soul get pleasure according to our texts? In exchange with Krishna.
Only.
Yeah. I was distributing Srila Prabhupada's books about 20 years ago on the campus of Stanford University near San Francisco. And I was with a friend called Janaki Ram, who's now a professor at University of Florida. And we were walking, and then he said to me, he said, yeah, you know that verse from the second canto of the Bhagavatam, that, and then he quoted the Sanskrit, yatatarar mula nishechanena, you know how we are like branches of a tree, or like limbs of the body, and that if you pour water on the root of the tree, then automatically the branches get water, or if you feed the stomach of the body, all the arms get strength. And I became jealous, because I thought, wow, he knows this verse. I had ever heard it before, and it sounded so good, and he knew it in Sanskrit, so as soon as I got back to the van, I started learning the verse, and I still know it, I guess, by Krishna's mercy, but it's a beautiful verse. Yatatarar mula nishechanena. It is this double analogy of the tree and the branches and the stomach and the arms, and how, you know, we are like the branches, and just like you can't get happiness by, or you can't get food as a branch by pouring water on yourself, you'll dry up. Unless, what happens? Unless, what gets water? The root. And similarly, you know, you could try to feed your ear, or feed your hand, or feed your foot, but unless food goes to the stomach, the arms and hands won't feel and feel strength. So similarly, we believe this. We believe that we are ontologically parts and parcels of Krishna. Kaviraj Goswami specifies it, right? He says, Jivera Sarup Hoy, Krishnera Nitya Das, Krishnera Tatashta Shakti Bheda Bit Prakash. We are manifestations simultaneously, one with and different from God. We are servants. Nitya Das. We are eternal servants of God. And so our function is to seek pleasure, but in our pure state, we are built to get pleasure when Krishna is happy. When Krishna's transcendental senses are satisfied, then we as parts and parcels of God become happy and satisfied. That's how, you know, we are designed. Here's a quote from Prabhupada from 1973. Short. Prabhupada says this. Devotees do not want to be pleased independently. Devotees' pleasure is seeing Krishna is pleased. Now one may say, well, okay, back to sex desire. If we're all souls and there's souls in the spiritual world, what happens? Do souls in the spiritual world have sex? In the spiritual world, in our spirit, in their spiritual bodies, do souls in the spiritual world, you know, enjoy sex pleasure? What's the answer? The answer is no. And to justify this answer, no, here's a verse from the third canto of the Bhagavatam that describes the residents of Vaikuntha. Now listen to this. The inhabitants of Vaikuntha travel in their airplanes made of lapis lazuli, emerald and gold. Although crowded by their consorts, who have large hips and beautiful smiling faces, they cannot be stimulated to passion by their mirth and beautiful charms. So in other words, in the spiritual world, people are really beautiful, like unconceivably beautiful. And couples, there's couples there. And they're also just inconceivably beautiful in their eternal, youthful, spiritual forms. And yet, they don't enjoy sex life. Why? Because there's a higher pleasure. The pleasure of pleasing Krishna. In the purport, Prabhupada says one sentence. In the spiritual world, people are not very attracted to sex life due to their exalted devotional attitude. Somewhere else he says that sometimes there is sex, but it's like, it's not important. So how do souls enjoy pure souls down here and pure souls in the spiritual world? Vicariously. I was speaking to Bhavini about this word. I was trying to find a German translation to it. There's an English word called vicarious. It's an adjective. Vicarious or vicariously. To do something vicariously. And we couldn't find it. It's not there in German, right? And vicarious.
I haven't
even heard of it. The definition means you do something, you experience something through someone else doing it. So a typical example, you enjoy when you know your children are playing in the park. So you enjoy because they're your children, and so through your children you're enjoying the pleasure of playing in a park. That's vicarious. Right? The father of the father of Justin Bieber enjoys fame vicariously through his famous son. Right? So, in the spiritual world, it's described that souls, pure souls, we, in our original state, we enjoy through Krishna's enjoyment. So here's a little rasika stuff. Like here's a few quotes that are kind of really esoteric, but I think they illustrate an important, you know, philosophical point. Check this out. The Manjaris, we know who the Manjaris are, the assistants of the gopis who assist Radharani in giving pleasure to Krishna. So it's described that the Manjaris, the perfection of their power of seeing and the thirst of their eyes is to see when Radha and Krishna lock in loving embrace. The perfection of their ears is to hear when Radha and Krishna are speaking loving words to each other. The perfection of their smelling is to smell when Radha and Krishna unite. These are all, you know, spiritual sense objects, spiritual smell, spiritual sight, spiritual sound. And in the Govinda Lilamrita, Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami says this, listen to this. If Krishna should touch Radharani, then lo and behold, her sakis, her expansions, right, start to tremble, they sweat, and their body hairs stand on end, and tears well in their eyes. And if Krishna should carefully sip the spirituous liquor of Radha's lips, it is they who become intoxicated. And then Kaviraj Goswami says, this is truly something wonderful. So this is sort of a very esoteric example, but it applies to us because, you know, we don't know who we are in the spiritual world, and we don't really care that much at our level right now. We just want to serve Krishna, and, you know, down here in Berlin in 2019. But, you know, when you go to a movie theater and you see the trailer of the next movie that's coming in a few months, it's kind of a trailer of what's waiting for us in the spiritual world and the kind of pleasure we experience in the spiritual world. And according to our acharyas, according to our tradition, we enjoy by seeing God enjoy with his pleasure potency, because we are expansions of that pleasure potency. So when we contribute to putting water on the root of the tree or putting food in the stomach, we become happy. We become happy. When you buy a computer, you have default settings, right? You turn it on, and then there's certain settings, boom, boom, and this software pops up, this default settings. The default settings of pure devotees of God is spontaneous attraction to loving and serving and pleasing God. So if you turn on the laptop, you know, the constitutional, you know, internal system, the internal drive of a pure devotee, and as soon as you turn it on, default setting, how can I please Krishna? The default setting of a conditioned soul, hint, hint, us, is the other way around. You know, we turn on the laptop, and what's the first thing? Where is sense gratification? Where is fulfillment of my selfish desires? And speaking of the residents of the spiritual world, it's like we hear in the 10th canto, for example, at one point, the cowherd girls get angry with Krishna because he cheats them and he doesn't treat them well. So they speak among themselves, right? We hear. And then they say, you know what, let's just forget this Krishna. Let's not talk about Krishna. Let's not think about Krishna. Just forget him. He's a scoundrel. He's a rascal. Yeah, you're right. Yes, okay. Boom. And then they stop talking. And there's a silence for like 9.5 seconds. And then one of them just can't help it. It's like, yeah, but when he plays the flute, oh yes, when he plays the flute, it's so beautiful. And when he dances, up, and it's just default setting. You know? In Bombay, one devotee told Prabhupada, Prabhupada, sometimes I'm in Maya, and Prabhupada said, no, you're always in Maya, sometimes you're in Krishna. So that's our default setting. So what happened? Like, what happened? That's us theoretically in our pure state, but that's not where we're at. So like, what happened? Like, what in the scenario, what in the script went wrong? Like, who messed up? Right? Who messed up? Well, according to Bhagavad Gita, we messed up. If any of you is a fan of the 1970s rock music, Led Zeppelin had a hit song called It's Nobody's Fault But Mine. It's nobody's fault but mine. It's nobody's fault but mine. It is nobody's fault but mine. Jean-Paul Sartre also kind of used to say that, although he was an atheist. But he used to say, you know, we're thrown in this world, we are thrown into this world, and And then we have to assume responsibility for our decisions in this world. We have to decide, you know, we are responsible for our destiny in this world, Jean-Paul Sartre would say. That echoes what Krishna says in the 13th chapter of the Gita. The soul alone is responsible for the experience of happiness or distress. So what does that mean specifically? Specifically, we have to go to this cardinal verse, which Prabhupada talks about, and I'll read a few lines in a discussion he had in Hyderabad in 1975. This verse is from Prabhudananda Sarasvati Thakur, famous verse, Krishna bahirmukkaya bhagavan chakare nikatos tumaye tare japatiya dhare. You know classical Bengali? No? It was some Bengali. Is my pronunciation okay? Krishna bahya, that's so good. Right? You're supposed to be diplomatic and say, yes, very nice. Krishna bahirmuk. Muk means face. And, you know, antar is inside, like we sing every day, or we're supposed to sing, or when we sing to Nishingadev, you know, bahir Nishingo, ridaye Nishingo, or bahir is outside, ridaye, in the heart. So bahir means outside. So bahir muk, muk means face. Prabhupada's mother used to call Prabhupada kashori muka, because he used to love to eat kachoris. So she used to call him kachori face. So... when you look away from Krishna, Krishna bahir mukoyo bhogavan chakare. When a soul looks away from Krishna with a desire to enjoy, then standing nearby, nikatostha maya tare japatiya dare. Maya slaps him and seizes hold of him. So whether we take that all the way, you know, whether we were with Krishna originally in Goloka Vrindavan and we left Krishna, or we come from the Tathagata, you know, there's this discussion among Vaishnavas about the origin of the soul. The point, it doesn't matter here, because the point is, at one point or other, we have rejected Krishna. Whether it was 5 billion lifetimes ago, or whether it was, you know, with Krishna, we have rejected Krishna with a desire to enjoy independently. That's the story. That's what happened to us. Listen to this. This is a Hyderabad discussion with Prabhupada. Will you indulge me?
Yes.
Want to hear?
Yes.
Prabhupada says, we are eternal servants of Krishna. As soon as we want to become master, that is the beginning of our first birth in the material world. We have got independence. Because Krishna says, Mamevamcho, Jiva Loka, Jiva Bhuta, we are part and parcel of Krishna. So Krishna has got full independence, but we are minute. Therefore, we have got minute independence. Our business is to serve Krishna, but as soon as we give up this idea, we want to become master, that is the beginning of our material birth. Remember the band Tears for Fears? Everybody wants to rule the world. We're in this world where everybody, it's perfect. We all want to rule the world. We all want to be masters. And how does this desire of jealousy of God manifest? Through sex desire, through lust, through kama, which can be taken as a general sense of selfish desire, but which definitely also has a very specific definition on sex desire. Like this desire to be the enjoyer. To be the enjoyer. So, what do you do? What do you do? Well, coming back to this seminar of Urmila, she very nicely described, there's two basic things you can do. I mean, before saying the two specific things you can do, the two paths you can take, the principle is, what do? We have this lust, we have the sex desire, which we understand is a perverted reflection of our original love for Krishna. So as Bhakti Tirtha Swami coined in his book, Turning Lust into Love, that the whole point is to somehow redirect this sex desire into love of God, right? If theoretically, you know, that's who we are ontologically in our healthy situation, now we're dealing with this perverted desire, this perverted energy, which is not really our original pure state, but it's there. So do we make the effort to transform it back into its original state, which is to just love and serve God, right? So you can do it as a sannyasi or a brahmachari, like no sex, and you just completely use all that energy for preaching, for studying, for spreading Krishna consciousness, for serving. Or you do it in the context of marriage, where Krishna has set up this institution of marriage where sex desire is engaged to beget, in an ideal sense, you know, beget nice Krishna conscious children. Krishna, God, has arranged that along with sex comes what? Comes children. Right? There's a purport where Prabhupada talks about how Krishna has put a pleasure-giving substance on our genitals. Like, what is it made of? Who knows? Like, you know, what scientists can like describe it. But he talks about this pleasure-giving substance that's on our genitals, and that gives a pleasure that is so intense that it overrides the responsibility of that come along with having children. But that's how God arranged it. Okay, you know, if you want to engage in sex, here's the responsibility, the loving responsibility. You know, I don't want to say it's a burden. It's a great responsibility, but it can also be a wonderful asset and a great service, right? But that's, you know, you have a choice. Either you remain celibate your whole life, or you get married, and in the ideal scenario, you have sex just for procreation, and you have beautiful Krishna conscious children. End of story. But it's not the end of story, unfortunately, because that doesn't really happen at a ground level. That reminds me, there's a Prabhupada disciple who, right now is visiting Lithuania, and I was at his house in America about 10 years ago, and it's a rural area, and he picked up the phone. It was Sunday morning. He picks up the phone and he goes, yeah, hello? Yes? Oh, Sheriff Johnson? Sheriff Johnson? Oh, don't tell me. Again? I'm so sorry. Okay, yeah, I'll come right away. Pick him up. I'm sorry. Hangs up. Go, what happened? And he goes, this is Sheriff Johnson. He's the sheriff of this area. And he said, my son, almost every weekend, he gets drunk with his friends. And then he ends up in the jail, basically. And he spends the night there, and I have to come and pick him up on Sunday. And so I accompany him to the car, and as he gets into the car, as he's closing the door, now this is a joke for people who really know about the specificities of ISKCON, you know, tradition of how many rounds of japa you're supposed to chant before begetting a child. Just 50, you know, our founder Acharya said that, you know, before you have a child, you should chant 50 rounds of japa before having a child, before begetting a child, before, you know, conceiving a child. That's a lot of rounds. That's like 8 hours of japa. So as he's getting into his car, you know, his son is drunk and at the sheriff's office, and this happens week after week, and he gets into his car and he looks at me and he goes, you know, I chanted 50 rounds for that kid. Slams the door and drives off. The story ends well because this boy actually, later on, a few years later, you know, came up to the platform of chanting 16 rounds and being a strict devotee and no nonsense, four regs, and, you know, and was initiated, blah, 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 and, you know, it's a really nice devotee, but chanted 50 rounds for that kid. So yeah, so in the ideal situation, that's what we do. That's what we do. If you're a single man here, or even if you're a single woman, and you just, yeah, I don't want to get married, and I can deal with this sex desire, no fall downs, like, okay, hard bowl, just sannyas ahead, and then full steam ahead, and if you can do it, fantastic, you know, all glories. ultimately, these are material considerations that don't touch the bhakti, right? It's not that the sannyas ashram is more sacred than the grihastha ashram. You understand? They're just varnashram considerations, and varnashram has nothing to do in an ontological sense with the bhakti of the soul, whether the soul is Indian or German or American. But now let's talk about what I, you know, wanted to talk about, and that is the practical. Now, I was having a discussion in Kaunas a few days ago. One devotee told me that Bhakti Gyan Maharaj, a famous sannyasi from Russia, told some people 10 years ago that 2% of his Khan members actually followed exactly how they're supposed to follow. And that was like 15 years ago or 10 years ago, pre-internet, pre-pornography. So, starting with Krishna and all our acharyas, there's something to be said about what Prabhupada coined as accidental fall downs. Right? And that's the thing that Urmila didn't talk about, which I think she should have, because we're all dealing with this. Who has had a perfect trajectory from the moment they, you know, started practicing strict bhakti yoga till now? I haven't. And I repent, I'm sorry, but I haven't. And I don't think any of us have, or maybe if some of us have, great, congratulations. But many of us haven't. So what's the philosophy for that? You know. Well, one wonderful verse, which is what Krishna himself speaks of in the Gita, at the end of chapter 9, where he says, Apiche sudura charo bhajate mam ananyabhak sadur eva samantavya samyak vyavahito hisa. Krishna, God, says, even if one commits the most abominable activity. Now, this is heavy because, you know, there's a huge range. Most abominable, you know. Most abominable, we can't even describe what these sort of, you know, horrible things. Murder, rape, you know, horrible, most abominable. So Krishna says, most sudurachar, even if one commits the most abominable activity, that person is to be sadhur eva, is certainly a sadhu, a saintly person. Why or how? If or when his or her determination is rightly situated at my feet. So Krishna understands this. As long as, and he says, you know, God says, you know, that person should not be judged, should not be criticized, if he or she is his determination to do what? Determination to become a pure devotee of God is there. If that determination is there, Krishna himself says, sadhu reva. He or she is a sadhu. It's amazing, huh? How liberal Krishna is speaking. And then if you look on the folio, I mean, just zooming from Krishna all the way to Prabhupada, this notion of accidental fall down. Let's go back. You know, back to Krishna. Krishna talks about how one who's, you know, who has a determination to control the senses, but, you know, even a man of discrimination, you know, the senses, that's a verse, the senses are so strong and impetuous. What does impetuous mean? Like a wind that just you can't control, right? The senses are so strong and impetuous that they forcibly drag away the mind, even of a man or a woman of discrimination who is endeavoring to control them. So you're trying your best, but hey, you know, boom, this thing pops up on the internet and boom, you fall into pornography and masturbation. Or, you know, you somehow become familiar with someone at the workplace and you have an affair with him, or you have an affair with her. And we're not even talking about having sex as sort of procreation within marriage, because that itself is not sinful. Now, I'll say it, it's not the highest standard, but there's a huge night and day difference between, you know, Prabhupada never rebuked his Grihastha disciples for having sex outside of procreation. It's not the highest standard, granted. We're not gonna, you know, lie and give you some watered down version. But sex within the context of sacred marriage is still is not sinful. That's something that's important to remember. So yeah, so you fall down somehow. What then? The accidental fall down. The accidental fall down. I'll always remember, Brahmachari in Los Angeles, Bhrigupati, who's one of my mentors, a senior married man, Prabhupada disciple, lovely man. This was like late 1990s, and there was a resident sannyasi in New Dwarka in Los Angeles who lived there. I won't mention his name. And he had a little ashram right next to the temple, and there were devotees living there, and he actually started initiating. And even Gauravani, the famous musician, was part of that group. And without getting into this, so he was quite popular in the community, you know. And one day, he did something completely inappropriate. He attempted some homosexual act with a devotee. And immediately he left. He disappeared overnight, leaving a letter saying, you know, I've gone to the forest of San Francisco, near San Francisco, and I'm going to perform some serious fasting and austerities. Now, everybody, you can imagine, New Dwarka, ISKCON New Dwarka is like the whole street is owned by ISKCON, so there's hundreds of devotees living there, and it was like the talk of the town, you know, oh, X and X Swami fell down, can you believe it? And his disciples were completely distraught, and there was all this talk, and I always remember Bhrigupati very calmly said, listen, Chandra, I don't understand why he went all the way up to, you know, to the forest to do some severe fasting. He said, look at this. So he picked up the nectar of devotion. Who doesn't know what is the nectar of devotion? Everyone knows. It's one of the main books that Prabhupada gave us, a summary study of Rupa Goswami's Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And he said, look, he opened it up. He said, look, you see right here? And he started reading to me a passage where Prabhupada describes this fundamental principle that there is no greater form of atonement. Atonement, what is atonement? How can you say atonement in German?
Buße.
Buße. There's no greater form of buße or atonement than practicing devotional service, which means for us then to chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Krishna Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. In other words, if you fall down, there is nothing more powerful, more redemptive, more salutary than you can do to, you know, correct yourself than to pick up the same beat bag that you were chanting on that very morning and continue chanting. So when you fall down, if you fall down, whether it's a really big fall down or a small fall down, pick yourself up and just continue the process of bhakti yoga. Continue chanting Hare Krishna. And more powerfully, get your transcendental behind in a kirtan, if I may. Because the process for, you know, even though we take vows to chant japa, Lord Chaitanya really emphasized sankirtan. And, you know, us old-timers, we use the word sankirtan to mean distributing Srila Prabhupada's books, but then in a sort of a grassroots definition of the term, sankirtan means, sam means together, getting together, like we did just before this class and how we'll do in a few minutes, and chant God's names together. Because if you have a fall down, or when you have an accidental fall down, that engagement of your senses in sense gratification makes you lose taste for Krishna's name, right? Am I right here? Of those of us who've experienced fall downs, you know, it's like you pick up that bead bag afterward and it's like, it's pretty dry. Krishna's name is pretty dry, right? I mean, it's already dry to begin with, so imagine. So sometimes you may not have the strength or the desire to chant japa. But if somehow or other you can go to that park when you're doing the Harinam on Sunday and just sit down and just close your eyes and chant and sing the Maha Mantra, then the power of the holy name purifies you like anything. The power of the Holy Name lifts you back up to that transcendental platform above the three modes of nature. It does. It does. And it's interesting, one thing that Christians often say is that, you know, God or Jesus is doesn't judge, he's ever forgiving. And then we can say the same thing about Krishna and Krishna's holy name. Like if you fall down, Krishna still loves you. We don't think about that, but it's kind of cool. Like you fall down, and what does that mean, Krishna? What does it mean to Krishna? It means like, okay, yeah, you know, yeah, I love you, nah, I don't love you, or this is for me. In the Gita, Krishna talks, I'm kind of going all over the place, but there's this verse in the Gita about a cycle. Krishna talks about a cycle that has been made to turn, right? A cycle has been made to turn. And there's a cycle where you give and sacrifice, you offer and sacrifice to the gods and ultimately, of course, to God. And then the gods, via God, give you blessings, material blessings, spiritual blessings, you can also say. And so there's this cycle that keeps going. Why? Because blessings come to you, but you don't keep them for yourself. You give them back to God. And God, being pleased with you, then gives you blessings. And in this way, there's like a cycle that keeps turning, right? It's so beautiful. So we're happy when we keep that cycle going. But sometimes you'll be like, you know, the blessings come to me, and I'm going to put a stick in the wheel for a second, and I'm going to enjoy myself, right? So that's what we do. We have a tendency to do that. We've been doing this for millions and millions of lifetimes. But don't worry about it. Like I said, just what happened, you pick yourself up, perform the Yuga Dharma. And therefore, how important it is to come together and just chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Krishna Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. It's so important because there's nothing more, nothing more powerful than that. So the technique is really simple. And then, of course, then you can do other things, you know, like, okay, get some help, get some counseling. Or if you're within the context of marriage and you'd like to have sex less, then maybe regulate. Some spiritual leaders in ISKCON recommend that to their married couples. Like, okay, you know, if you can't just stop completely because you don't have enough taste for Krishna, this all has to do with taste. It's not like we're repressing. It's more a question of how much pleasure we're getting from God. And that pleasure makes it easy for the lower taste to be given up. Right? We're not like Buddha, so with all due respect to Buddha, the avatar of Krishna, and you know, Zen Buddhists, we're not all about just repressing. No, 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 no. It's more about, yes, 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 please, Krishna, fill me with your love. Fill me with your, you know, please be happy with me. Because if you're happy, I'll be happy. And then, you know, it's just like the Vaikuntha residence. They're flying in their airplanes like, you want to have sex? No, not really. I'd rather go see Krishna, you know? Right? That's the principle. So before concluding, I want to just ask, does anybody have any questions or comments? Yes?
You said that we are here in this world because we wanted to enjoy independently. But is there a concrete example where somebody is in the spiritual world and wanted to enjoy something, and now he is in his form? Our scriptures tell some story.
So the question is sort of going to the issue of the fall of the soul here.
Yeah.
Uh-oh, a can of worms. You know, when you open a can of worms and they all come out, it's very difficult to close the lid. Well, this is a hypothetical story. And then there's some references, but... And also, maybe it's not good to get too much into this topic of the origin of the soul, because for sure, whether it's originally with Krishna or whether it's 500 lifetimes, we've definitely, at least for 500 lifetimes, been rejecting Krishna and trying to get sense gratification. So that much we can agree on, and therefore the solution is the same. But I remember I was speaking about this ashram in Los Angeles once. Gauravani, this famous musician, most of you know Gauravani, he was giving a lecture, and I don't know where he got this from. He said, imagine you're in the spiritual world and you're walking down the street or the path and you see this beautiful flower. And you pick up the flower and you say, wow, this flower would look so good on Krishna's turban. And then you say, but wait, no, actually, this flower would look good on my turban. And then all of a sudden, you're in the body of Lord Brahma, and then you're in the body of Lord Indra, and one of the Gandharvas, and Apsaras, and down to a human being, and then you degrade yourself down to a, you know, pig body, and then you're in a plant body, and a fish body, you're down to the microscope, you know, amoeba, and then gradually you go back up, incarnation after incarnation, back to the human form, you meet some Hare Krishnas, you take some prasadam, you chant Hare Krishna, you die thinking of Krishna, and you're back in that same position with the flower, and you say, actually, it looked better on Krishna's turban. Theoretical story, but I love it. Now, if you want Shastra, you know, we can quote the Goswamis, but like I was saying this morning, Bhaktisiddhanta said you can burn all the scriptures, all the Vedic scriptures, all the Vedas, the Itihasas, the Puranas, the Upanishads, the Karmakanda, burn them all, or if they all burn, and if only Srimad Bhagavatam remained, nothing would be lost. Quote from Bhaktisiddhanta. So the Bhagavatam for us, Gaudiya Vaishnavas, is, you know, is so important. And in the Bhagavatam, we have the story of Puranjana. Right? It's an analogous story, it's an analogy, right? Not a metaphor, but with allegory. It's an allegorical story. Narada Muni comes to this rich king and realizes, whoa, this king is really puffed up. And if I tell him, look, you're a materialist, you're wasting your time, he's not going to take it well. So I'm going to tell this king the story of a king, but it's actually this king's life, but telling him indirectly so that the king will learn what to do through a story of an imaginary king when actually Narada is talking about this very king. Okay? So you know that story, right? The allegory of the city of nine gates, right? And this city represents our body, the two eyes, the nose, the anus, the genitals, the ears. They have nine gates in this body. And this king goes into this city and he enjoys with his wife. And then he dies. And then he takes birth as Puranjani, a beautiful princess. And she gets married to this very nice Vaishnava prince. And they live together for a long time. And then, as you know, traditional Vedic culture, I guess, recommended back in the days, they take vanaprastha, they go into the forest, and there she serves her husband while he's doing some, you know, type of Satya Yuga meditation on Vishnu and stuff. And one day, as she's coming back to the ashram, and she starts massaging her husband's feet, she realizes that her husband's feet are cold. This is right in the, I think, fourth canto or eighth canto, I forgot. Fourth canto, thank you. And so she touches his feet, she realizes he's dead. She breaks down crying. And you know, what does she do? She can't, like, you know, Instagram message her mother, like, please come, you know, she's in the jungle. And so the text describes that as she's crying and crying, she starts piling the wood to, you know, to burn his body. And as she's doing this, one little boy out of nowhere appears and starts talking to her. And the acharyas say, this is Paramatma. And remember, we are monotheists. There's no difference between Paramatma and Krishna. Like, we are monotheists. Paramatma and all the avatars, ultimately there's one. It's Krishna, Eka Ishvara. You know. So this little boy comes and says, you know, don't you remember me? And then he says, and this is right in the Bhagavatam, he says, don't you remember you and me have an intimate relationship of friends? But you have left me. We were like two swans in the lake, but you have left me to become an enjoyer in the material world. So for those devotees, you know, who like to believe that the soul falls from Krishna Lila, that, you know, we were in an intimate relationship with God in the most intimate region of the spiritual world, there's those verses from the Bhagavatam. I'm not saying that the others who say that we come from some sort of, you know, Tatashta Shakti and we were never really with Krishna, don't have good arguments. I'm not saying that, because even in the Gita you have, you know, once you go back, you never fall down. So, but what I'm saying is that you asked a question, and your question was, is there any Shastric reference to a soul being intimately with Krishna? And right there in the fourth canto, you have those two or three verses. Yes, Rahul? Sir? Oh no, another question on the fall of the soul. What about like, ask something practical, like something about pornography or something about, you know, I don't know, polygamy or remarriage or... But anyway, please, ask whatever you want.
Already a can of worms, you already said. And I was lucky that I got to hear the lecture from Radhanath Maharaj where he actually says about this. Like, if you're drowning in the ocean and if someone is coming to help you, would you ask them to wait, or would you think, like, okay, where did I fall from? Like, whether did I from the cliff, or did someone push me into this?
Right. Does everybody hear that? There was a lecture by His Holiness Radhanath Swami where he says, if you're drowning and someone comes to save you, you're not going to ask, or the question doesn't arise, well, did I fall from the tree, or did I fall from a boat, or, like, you got to get out. So similarly, like, that's where we're at. We're in a fire, the samsara fire of repeated birth and death. Don't worry about it, right? And I think that's one thing that Prabhupada stressed very much. Like, don't worry about it, just go back to Godhead. And if you're, you can always figure it out once you're back in the spiritual world, right?
Exactly. Like, right. You said, like, we are bhaktas and we are jnanis. And jnanis always want to satisfy their intellectual capabilities or something. But we have to think about something practical.
Right.
Just think of getting out of the ocean rather than thinking about...
Right. Yes?
You said that it's not very helpful to say no. I won't do that. Yeah, like I remember when I quit smoking. No, I don't want to smoke. That makes it so hard. Yeah. Can you give something practical example how to focus towards Krishna? You know, because the things, the karma and the attachments we are dealing with are very strong, yeah, and we're facing it, and we get reminded by the devotees, by the scriptures, we shouldn't do it, or we shouldn't, I don't know, be attached, or whatever, yeah, and in this way we deal with it all the time. Can you give a practical advice how to focus more on Krishna?
One thing is, be careful what comes into your ears, into your eyes. You know, how much time do we spend on social media, and how much of that social media is actually Krishna conscious? And I'm not saying we should not go on social media, or we should not watch karmi movies. I hate that term, karmi clothes, karmi movies. We shouldn't watch non-devotional movies. Well, you know, these Christians, in America, you know how we have, there's Netflix? So there's a network called PureFlix. And they're like these really sort of corny, cheesy, sentimental, but it's all Christian-based movies, you know? So if you want your safe, you know, Christ-conscious movies, you go on PureFlix and watch these movies. But it's kind of cool, and eventually, hopefully, we're supposed to take pleasure from Mahabharata and Chaitanya Charitamrita and... Ooh, how we love. We can't wait, right, till the end of the day when we can get together and read Krishna book together. Not. Unfortunately. But we're supposed to, right? So practically speaking, though, like, be careful what to speak of, like, really harmful, obviously harmful things. There's things that are maybe not explicitly, sexual, but that are implicitly and that, influence. So we have to be careful what we hear and what we watch. And like I was saying this morning, you get the strength also from, watch out what negative things comes and through your ears. And also make sure you're getting enough positive spiritual things in your eyes and in your ears. So how important it is to read, to hear lectures, to remind ourselves, I'm not this body. Oh, there's this whole universe with all sorts of, I'm a tiny little creature. There's all sorts of things going on in this universe that I can't perceive. And all these authorities, they speak on the detrimental effects of lust. And so you have to remind yourself by hearing. And if you don't have time, then, like I was saying, get yourself a Bluetooth speaker, and while you're brushing your teeth, while you're taking a shower, while you're driving, while you're in the subway, you know, hear audiobooks, hear lectures of Prabhupada, hear lectures of your spiritual masters. That's really important, because if you hear and hear and hear, then you know, you get that strength to be able to chant. So be careful, you know, accept and reject what this principle that Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about. How do you have to accept what's favorable and reject what's unfavorable? And everybody is slightly different, but the principle is the same. You reject things that, now this is not going to be good for me. But like you said, the problem is we're attached, and that we go for it anyway. So then another factor is you make sure you have good association, regular good Vaishnava association. You know, when a very, very advanced soul comes, it's nice. And when you get the association of a really, you know, you go to a kirtan mela. Do you feel lusty at a kirtan mela? Not really. I mean, the guys are checking out the girls, and the girls are checking out the guys. There's not like, that's kind of cute actually, in a Krishna conscious way. Because hopefully that leads to nice marriages, you know. So somehow get absorbed in more Shravanam Kirtanam. Yes.
So in religions, I mean, all religions have standards, and I think Satyanand Maharaj once said that the most judgmental people are religious people, because they have something to measure others against. And I think often we have standards about many different things, and it can lead to people feeling better than others, and also people feeling worse or feeling like they're not good enough for Krishna. And my question is, how, if we feel this in regard to anything, that we are not good enough for Krishna, or that Krishna and the scriptures or acharyas might be telling us that we're not good enough, which they aren't, but it might come across like that, how we can overcome that?
Well, there's Krishna talks about that in the 11th canto. He says, having awakened faith in the narrations of my pastimes, being convinced that sense gratification leads to no good, but still being unable to give it up, my devotee should remain happy. Regretting his past deeds or repenting, he or she should continue chanting and hearing about me. So there's, I think it's in the Uddhava Gita, Ravindra Sarupa likes to quote this verse. So Krishna says directly, you know, like, hey, don't get depressed. It's my order. Remain happy. Repent, but, you know, be happy. Not like, hey, I did sense gratification today. Haribol, no. You know, like, damn it, you know, I fell down again. I'm so fallen. But then, if you go to the extreme and just like, oh, I'm too fallen, then you know, you start thinking about yourself too much, and you forget that, hey, there's Krishna, and he's dancing with the gopis right now, and we're supposed to think about him and try to enter there. And Krishna himself, and you should remain happy. There's that verse. It's better to have a feeling of that than the feeling of superiority that you mentioned. That's the dangerous one. The triumphalist, we are better than everyone. But then you start judging other people in other religions and even devotees in your own community, and that can lead to real tragedies. That's what I can think of. Yes, we go until 5:30, right?
No, yes.
Until what time?
That's correct.
Maybe we'll take one more question and I'll just wrap it up.
Please tell us how Lord Jagannath exchanges with his devotees. I mean,
how Lord Jagannath exchanges with his devotees. Okay. Well, we'll experience it in exactly 28 days.
No, I mean, with me, I can tell us a little more, because I was the last Radhiyata, but there was no exchange.
There was no exchange. Well, what comes to mind immediately is a devotee telling Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur. Bhakti Charumarj tells the story. Yeah. One disciple of Bhaktisiddhanta came to him and said, Kumarj, I'm not feeling any reciprocation. I don't feel like I'm making any advancement. And then he said, ah, you're making advancement. That's a sign you're making advancement. So you just revealed to us your exalted position, Prabhu. So let us stay together and help each other and not judge each other and just continue this beautiful process of Harinam Sankirtan and try to give pleasure to Krishna and help others come to Krishna. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Jagannath Baladeva Subhadra ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.